and Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois. This is the Closing Market Report. It's the 17th day of September 2009. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group. He's in Decatur, Illinois. In agricultural news, the CME Group says it would prefer the CFTC not step in to regulate position limits. The government of Japan is moving to introduce income supports for grain farmers. And the Brazilian suitor for Pilgrim's Pride says it expects the U.S. poultry producer to increase exports in the coming months. We'll have details of these and other stories shortly. At the end of this half hour, meteorologist Peter Levitt will join us to take up the agricultural weather forecast, and it all happens on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
Support for Illinois Public Media comes from Syngenta, featuring AgriSure 3000 GT hybrids, designed to give you up to 38 bushels more per acre if you have rootworms, and an average of 3 more even if you don't. More information on Syngenta's AgriSure 3000 GT hybrids is at agrisuretraits.com.
On this Thursday afternoon, futures in Chicago finished the day like this. Nearby December wheat, 5.5 cents lower at $4.61¾. The March at 481.5, down 5.5. The May at $4.94, down 5.5 cents. July, 505¾, down 4.5. And September futures at 521, down 4.5 cents. December in Kansas City, where they trade the hard red, $4.74¼. Down 5¾. From the corn pit in Chicago, $3.29, the settlement price for the nearby December contract. Lead option down 7¼. The March following suit, 7¼ lower at $3.42¼ a bushel. And the May contract in the corn pit, $3.51½, down 7¼. July, $3.60¼, down 6¾. September, $3.68¾, down 6½ cents. And December futures for 2010, down 6 cents at $3.78¾. December oats at $2.14, down 3¼. And the November beans at $9.53½, rather $9.53 even, up 2½ cents. January at $9.56¼, up 1¼. March on out, lower, $9.55½, down 1¼. The May beans at $9.51½, down 5. And July at $9.52, down 6½ cents. Next year's November for 2010 at $9.18, down 12 cents on the day. And the livestock finished like this on the afternoon. Nearby October live cattle at $85.77½, a $1.20 lower. Lean hogs at $52.17½, down 27½ cents. Outside markets on the afternoon look like this. Nearby crude oil futures, $72.47 a barrel, down 4 cents. November, or rather down, 4 cents in fact. November being crude oil at $72.94, up 7 cents for the day. Now the October ethanol, $1.63½, a penny and a half lower. Natural gas at $3.47¼, down 28¼. The RBOB at $1.85¾, up 0.4 cents. And the diesel fuel, that's heating oil, $1.84½, up 1¼ cents. Propane futures at $0.97¾, up 1¼ cents. And the gold at $1,012.30, down $6.60. The Dow now stands at 9,800 even, just about 10 points higher on the day. And the U.S. dollar at 76.19 is down 0.04 for the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like from our own chief meteorologist, Ed Kieser. He says tonight in the northern and central sections of the two states, mostly clear skies. In the south, increasing cloudiness, some showers arriving near the Ohio River overnight. Lows will range from 45 in the north, away from Lake Michigan, to around 60 in the far south. And then tomorrow, says Ed, in the north and central sections, mostly sunny skies. In the south, mostly cloudy, scattered showers tomorrow. Highs will range from 75 in northern Indiana to 82 in the south. The extended forecast says Saturday we'll see scattered showers, likely in the southern quarter to third of the two states, with dry weather continuing in the further northern areas. Scattered showers and thunderstorms may spread northward across Illinois and Indiana on Sunday and continue on and off through Monday and Tuesday. At this point, it appears most locations will get some rain, but a few, of course, may be missed. More on the agricultural weather when we talk with Pete Levitt at the bottom of this hour.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Rebecca King in Galesburg at 309-341-5007. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Hi, this is Illinois Public Media Agricultural Director Dave Dickey. Join us this evening at the Remington Library in Remington, Indiana, for another one of our Illinois Public Media Agriculture Outlook panels. Tonight's meeting begins at 6:30 Eastern Time. Panelists include Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities, Steve Erdman of EFG, and Brian Maple of FC Stone & Company. That's at the Remington Library in Remington, Indiana, this evening at 6:30 Eastern Time. We hope to see you there. The meeting is free and no advance registration is required.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is a Thursday afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason. On the line with us today to take a look at the agricultural futures markets are Dan Zwicker of ADM at Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Let's start with your view of the technical side of the marketplace. It's been a bit of a whipsaw week, although we did have a pretty good uptick in the marketplace at one point. Is it good enough to hold the market to the higher side?
Well, it's maybe a shade early, but I like what I see. Now, after I say that, though, you know, it was a weather market, and weather markets have a tendency to give you a lot of false signals. And basically, you know, it was concerned that we were going to get a frost in here before September was out, and the market jumped higher, and we had a big round of short covering activity and chased all the small shorts out. And with the shorts all out, there's not a lot of buying power underneath the market. But anytime you exceed a previous rally high point, and this is the case that we saw on corn. Corn did penetrate the high that we made here in late August on East corn at 37.5. Now we're back down below that, but I do think that this week's action, actually last week, we finished out the week with a weekly reversal up, and then we saw some strong follow-through this week. I think it is a strong indication that the market is trying to make a stand here above this $3 level on December corn futures. So I think it's somewhat encouraging. The market may be more in a sideways type trend, but at least from a technical perspective, you have to be somewhat supportive that the market's going to try to make a stand here above the $3 for early harvest low anyway.
Early harvest low, do you have some upside targets in mind?
Well, I think we need to spend some more time consolidation, so I wouldn't I would not be surprised to see another quiet day or a slightly lower day here tomorrow. Could be a little higher. I kind of think beans will be. Whether or not it can pull corn higher or not, we'll have to wait and see. But another day or two of consolidation, and then if the big move up on Tuesday is to be validated, we would see another surge up sometime next week, and that's probably going to depend upon whether or not frost comes back into the forecast or not. That might be the catalyst there. But it wouldn't surprise me that we take another stab up, take out this week's high, which was, I think, 347 or so. So there is a shot, I think, that we could move December futures into the 350s anyway for another stab, and then we'll just kind of take one step at a time.
You know, the high for the week so far is 347.75. So the next question then is, fundamentally, can you support the higher prices? And I'm going to suggest that if it was activated by fear of frost, and even if that doesn't come to fruition, can you manage to hold corn at the higher prices?
Well, we don't know exactly what size of crop we have out there, and many times the trade has a tendency to get ahead of itself, whether it's a big crop or a small crop. We always seem to go to the extreme, and maybe this crop is definitely a good crop, it's a big crop, but it may not be as big as what some people want to make it, and that would stop the ending stocks number from growing. And once the ending stocks number stops growing, then all of a sudden you've got the prices where they need to be, that all the bearishness is priced in. So we'll have to kind of wait and see when we get into harvest and actually hear the actual yields kind of take hold to see whether or not USJ's yield is going to hold up or even, you know, maybe increase. But we do have record demand underneath this crop. The ethanol industry is in a very profitable situation right now, so you have good corn grind. You do have strong export interest in corn with the weak dollar and the low prices. Actually, this is a real interesting chart I got, is if you convert corn prices into the dollar index values, actually we are back to early 2007 lows. So we are we have some of the cheapest corn in the international market we've had in several years. So I'm very positive in that point. Granted, the livestock industry is going to take a while for that to heal, but we're at least headed in that direction of healing. And I think as the marketing year goes on, I think we'll be surprised how much corn we put away on the demand side, Todd.
On the soybean side of the ledger, when you look at the lead option, I think the harvest month, I'm sorry, it's putting in at this point a weekly outside, probably to the upside. for the moment, at least, you think it can sustain that through the end of the week?
I think so. I would be surprised if the bean market would fall apart tomorrow. I think the market has done a good job of holding on to Tuesday's advances. Yes, we've had a couple down days, but we've held on to most of them. And the market, like you said, is poised to have a weekly reversal up on it. This is following the weekly reversal up that we had on corn last week.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm somewhat encouraged by this price action, both corn and soybeans, that the market is looking to try to make a stand here. Seasonally, you could probably argue that these lows, if these are early seasonal lows, they're 2 to 3 weeks earlier than average. But if you look at the overall price pattern on corn and soybeans throughout the year, the waves of the pattern have come a couple weeks ahead of time anyway. So it kind of fits the pattern that corn and soybeans have been having of having their peaks and their valleys a couple weeks ahead of average. So, and it's kind of strange since the crop is probably 2 to 3 weeks late that the market seems to be working 2 weeks or so ahead of average. I would not be surprised to see the market try to pull away from these lows that we've posted here over the last couple of weeks as we go on into late month and into October.
In recent years, we've often talked about the South American soybean crop, which is being put in the ground at this point as a cap to this marketplace, but they had a very poor harvest last season. Will it take longer for that crop to have that coming crop to have an impact on the price of U.S. soy?
It could very well be, because it's absolutely important that they get off to a good start, have generally favorable weather in order to assure a big South American supply to the world market. Well, starting as early as March, but a lot of it really won't reach the world market until you get into April, May. And until that crop is harvested, soybean demand's definitely here in the United States to stay for a while. So I think you could very well see that the soybean market could stay historically stronger than it normally does during harvest. A little stronger than it normally does during the early growing season of South America, based on the fact is that the overall world supplies are still very tight.
Dan, we appreciate you being with us today.
Very well.
Dan Zwickers with ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois, joins us here on the Closing Market Report on a Thursday afternoon.
Support for WILL comes from Stuart Peterson. Since 1985, offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks by developing dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is at stuart-peterson.com.
Dave Dickey is here now with today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, CME Group says it wants to retain control over restrictions set on speculators trading energy futures. CME's proposal, which would set stricter position limits but grant exemptions to a broad group of the market, landed as the U.S. Commodities Futures Trading Commission is still hashing out its plans to change regulations. So far, the CFTC has remained quiet on specifics, saying only that the agency intends to use limits on positions. A draft rule is expected from the CFTC this fall. The new Japanese government is pledging to protect and revitalize agriculture. The Democratic Party has said it would introduce income support for farmers, including small farms, to foster rural communities while aiming for self-sufficiency in major grains. Japan is the world's biggest net importer of food and manages to produce only about 40% of its own food needs. Nearly one-third of Japan's agricultural imports comes from America. House Majority Leader Steny Hoyer says he is committed to getting the chamber to vote on pending free trade agreements with Panama and Colombia before the end of the year. Speaking recently to the National Association of Manufacturers, Hoyer acknowledged that the liberal wing of the House Democrats opposes the two bilateral FTAs, but that he nonetheless hopes to bring them to the floor. Earlier this year, 54 House Democrats wrote to President Barack Obama to express their opposition to both agreements. Brazil's JBS says it expects poultry producer Pilgrim's Pride's export sales from the U.S. to increase after it buys the U.S. company. JBS USA's chief executive officer says that it could mean up to 20% of its revenue will come from export sales. Some analysts are suggesting that profits could accelerate for rural landowners planning to lease rights to wind developers. New 30% tax rebates in the economic stimulus package could jumpstart perhaps $3 to $10 billion of new wind projects before the end of 2010. Wind energy groups are also working behind the scenes to push for a higher renewable electricity standard to electrify investment in renewable energy, either as part of the cap-and-trade legislation or a stand-alone energy bill. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. That's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Mark Report and of Commodity Week. Both programs you can listen to anytime you'd like on our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find those two programs, other agricultural programming, agricultural weather forecast in the morning and the afternoon, and a way to sign up for our free weekend newsletter. It's all about the commodity markets. Dave Dickey writes that one. It's a great newsletter. All you have to do is hit subscribe over on the right-hand side of the page. If you don't like it, that's fine too. Just hit unsubscribe. It's just as easy to get off the list as it is to get on the list. It's all at willag.org.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Up next, the National Safety Council, of course, is reminding farmers and ranchers to take care during the harvest season. I'll have more on one of the nation's most dangerous jobs and what the first person on the scene of a farm accident should not do.
Last year, there were some 80,000 farm-related injuries around the nation. Most of the time, these injuries involved machinery. Usually a hand or an arm, a foot or a leg was caught up in fast-moving tools. University of Illinois Extension Farm Safety Specialist Bob Heron says it's a common accident and one where it's best to leave the victim in place and wait for the first responders.
A lot of our extremity injuries, so to the hands, arms, and legs that get caught in a piece of equipment or whatever, normally just from what happens, a person gets entangled in equipment, and from a first aid standpoint, if somebody comes on the scene, the mistake they often make is try to pull them out. They want to shut the equipment off, of course, if it isn't shut off. But often they should leave the victim in the machine unless there's some danger or fire or whatever, so that if and call for help for an emergency crew to come out that has training to deal with a person who's in that situation.
Once the victim is freed, Heron says they can quickly lose blood and go into shock. It's important for the first person on the scene to shut down and stabilize the equipment, call an emergency crew, and then wait for them to make a decision about how best to proceed with the extraction.
Another issue in farms this time of year is children. Now, we have a number of injuries with children because they come home from school, for example, or on weekends, and they want to be out where the excitement is, particularly boys, our research shows. And so they want to get out and they want to play. They want to be on the equipment, riding on the equipment. It all looks very exciting to them. But we need to realize that allowing children to ride on our equipment is putting them at significant risk because they can easily be thrown off the equipment because most of our equipment doesn't have any shock absorption in it, like a tractor, except in the operator's seat, and wagons and so on and so forth are very little. And it's very easy for them to be thrown off the equipment and be run over by the machine before we could stop it.
The lateness of the harvest season this year has a Heron particularly concerned about farm kids. He has no doubt the pressure to bring in the crop will cause moms and dads to ask too much of their offspring too soon.
This year could happen where we're getting a rush to get things done, and we start having our younger children, say they're 10, 11, 12-year-olds, operating tractors and doing different things in field work or moving wagons on roads or whatever it might be. They are very much at risk to accidents because One example is that they have very significant limitations. They may look like an adult and act to some degree like an adult, but they have one limitation is simultaneous motor skills. Where you have to move, if something goes wrong with the tractor, for example, it goes down in a ditch or whatever, and you've got to turn the steering wheel one direction, push in on the clutch with your foot, and maybe take an implement out of the field with a hydraulic system. You got to do that all at once to get the machine under control, and we don't develop our capacity as human beings to do that very well until we're between 13 and 15 or 16 years of age.
On the subject of kids, the younger ones will play in the gravity flow wagons. It's easy to get stuck, sucked down, and suffocated as those wagons empty. Don't let that happen. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'll be back in 2 minutes when we'll talk with meteorologist Peter Levitt about the agricultural weather forecast.
It's National Creme de Menthe Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1879, Frank Luntz was born, and American entomologist, museum curator, educator, conservationist, and writer. He was one of the leading U.S. entomologists of the first half of the 20th century. He taught that insects were an integral part of the environment. In 1898, William S. Burroughs died, an American inventor. Burroughs invented and manufactured the first adding machine with a printer. In 1904, the first balloon used for meteorological research in the U.S. was released in St. Louis, Missouri. The balloon carried instruments that would return to Earth when the balloon burst. Since the first launch, literally millions of weather balloons have been launched by the National Weather Service and its predecessor organizations. And in 1965, the Green Acres TV show debuted. Running until 1971, the show featured the yearnings of want-to-be farmer attorney Oliver Wendell Douglas, who purchased Sight Unseen, a 160-acre farm in Hooterville. By the way, one of our favorite episodes has Douglas's wife Lisa telling the folks of Hooterville that her husband was a ruthless cow killer. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Mark Report from Illinois Public Media. It is a Thursday afternoon. We always talk on this day with Pete Levitt, agricultural meteorologist. Good afternoon to you, Pete.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Hey, we have a new 60 and 90 day forecast out. What does it show?
Well, they show warm in the west for both October and the 3 month of period, October, November, December. Elsewhere across the country for October, there is no forecast. The temperature they list as equal chances from about the western plains to the Atlantic coast, so not much information there. As far as precipitation is concerned, we have some wetness in October and for the 90-day period as well along the Gulf Coast and in parts of the Southern Great Basin region, and dry in the Pacific Northwest. And again, there is nothing either way, wet or dry, forecast for most of the central and eastern portions of the country north of the Gulf. So all told, not a very informative forecast in terms of looking for departures from normal, which probably means that the models are ambiguous about what they're trying to forecast.
Well, that probably also means good news for producers because it generally isn't terribly wet during the fall and means harvest will proceed nicely. And that the frost dates, if they come, you think they'll catch much of the crop on a normal date?
Yeah, the normal dates could probably do that. The market instability, to say the least, this past week has been a result of the fact that at least one of the reasons are the numerical forecasts, the computer-derived forecasts, have been so bad on consistency on the day-to-day runs. I don't recall recently seeing them as bad. Not only can't they get consistent between one day and the next, they can't even be consistent between 6 hours and the next 6 hours.
That's right.
And so what you get is a forecast that says, oh, the very cold air is coming, and then the next run it says, no, forget what we said the last time. And in the absence of good model guidance, one can depend on what we like to use all the time is persistence. And right now we are not looking at a frost or freeze for the next 7 days. As a matter of fact, temperatures will probably average a little bit above normal, especially towards the early part of next week throughout most of the Midwest. And we've got some rain coming as well. We have some showers working in about Sunday, and then maybe a little respite on Monday and showers again on Tuesday and maybe even into Wednesday across the central portions of the Corn Belt. Not very heavy rain. The heavy rain will be further south, but we will get some precipitation and temperatures mild, and that's what we need. The growing degree days are not catching up, and that's what you would expect in the fall when you don't get many growing degree days, even on the warm days, so that the crop is way behind. That's all reflected in the USDA numbers that came out earlier this week. It's about as far behind as on maturity as I've seen it in recent years. And we're going to have a corn crop that's for the northern half of the belt is going to go in wet, I'm afraid, even if the freeze date holds off normal or a little beyond.
Pete, we appreciate you being with us today.
Uh-huh, my pleasure.
Hey, thanks much. That's Pete Levitt, agricultural meteorologist, joins us here on the Closing Mark Report from Illinois Public Media on a Thursday afternoon. You have a great day. I'm Todd Gleason.